Were you skiing a lot that winter, or you just
worked? You had to ski. You got to work.
I know. That's what I did too.
And I'd never skied powder before.
A lot of it.
You learned how to ski powder.
Yeah.
Slowly. You'd be telling stories that can't be told.
Welcome to my podcast, Whistler Stories That Need to Be Told. Today I'm chatting with Cliff Jennings. Cliff was one of the first employees at the Garibaldi Lift Company, the original Whistler Mountain builder and operator back in the 60s. Also, he was one of the first resort municipality of Whistler employees in the 70s, not to mention one of the first hotel managers and one of the first search and rescue volunteers. So Cliff has a lot of history here and contributed a lot to Whistler's development. Welcome, Cliff.
What brought you to Whistler? What was your passion to come to this crazy backwoods place?
Skiing.
Right on, yeah. We all did want to do that.
Very much. Skiing back east and had, from Edmonton area, skied the Rockies.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. So you're experienced. You've been in some big mountains.
Oh, yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. And climbed some big mountains there and everything like that.
Right.
Yeah. But when I heard about this new ski area being built, I bought that 57 Volkswagen Beetle.
What year was that?
That was in 1965.
Okay.
In October. Just headed west over, through Jasper and then down below. So that part of the Trans-Canada, I realized, through the Fraser Canyon, had only been finished in 1963. And arrived in Vancouver, stayed overnight, then headed north through Squamish and asked where the new ski area is being built. And they sent me up the Garibaldi Neve in a Volkswagen Beetle.
With Red Heather access there?
Bump, 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 bump in the little Volkswagen.
Crazy.
And then I realized something's wrong. It was pouring with rain. So I came back down again and then turned right. And went north over the dam. That's where the road was. Wasn't paved.
Yeah, over Duffy. Daisy. Daisy
no, Lake over, Dam. What is now Highway 99.
Yeah.
But you went over the dam. There was no road.
Yeah, on Daisy Lake.
Daisy in Lake.
Garibaldi there.
Yeah, and then headed north and arrived at this muddy parking lot in the pouring rain.
So the road wasn't paved at that point.
It wasn't paved.
It was just
like a logging road. They paved it the next year. And so the whole first winter, it was gravel.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went up, I went up, and there's this muddy parking lot. I see activity. I pull up into it, and there's guys filling sandbags around foundations. It's just been poured. That was the gondola barn. And so I walked up there and asked one of the guys, who's in charge? And they pointed to a guy over there. It says Eric Lomas. He was filling sandbags. So I went over there and they said, is there any work? And he gave me sandbags, and a whole bunch of sand and a shovel.
You're hired.
He said, we just poured the gondola barn and Whistler Creek was raging.
Wow.
So it was the first flood.
And this is in October of
65. Yeah. The a gondola was, the towers weren't even in.
They hadn't even built the barn. And it's October.
That's right. that's right.
Wow. That's
so and then they just pushed right through, and I was hired on, and I worked with the construction company with Mueller Lifts.
Right. Yeah.
And basically went wherever I was told, and ended up, the main job was, the first one was helping to pull the cable to mid-station. The mid-station
pulling it up.
They had a lead line,
like a straw
that went
line
over the towers.
Straw line, yeah.
Straw line, yeah. And that rolled forward, and then you'd pull the main line up. First problem was it broke the floorboards, so we had to reinforce the floorboards.
They were pulling the rope,
the main rope line.
Uphill, not down?
Uphill, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And they just had the one split in the rope, so they were going to bring it around and then splice it.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So it went up and then went around the bull wheel there. Then it was pulled down, and then the splice was down in the valley, just in front of the gondola barn. And I helped with that. It was about 110 feet. And so basically the help with it is that you straighten all the kinks out. You're given a a piece of metal with a hole in it.
Yeah.
And you straighten them out and put them together.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the next job I had was building the upper T-bar, which is the, because they had our lower T-bar already, and the upper T-bar. And the upper T-bar, we were building that in January and February.
In the snow.
In the snow.
Big snow.
Big snow. In fact, so much snow that they got it open the beginning of February. It was the last lift to open, and it was buried by the beginning of March, including the bowl wheel. So the following year, I was on the crew that built it again. They raised the foundations, the bowl wheel.
Yeah.
They raised all the towers. And
well, they kept digging it out. I remember that was a constant.
Yeah, I know. Even after raising it, they kept, because it was a lot of snow, a deposition zone.
Yeah, it's true.
That's it. Now it is still there. It's the only lift. I think it's the one on the left, but they shortened it because of the big chair.
Yeah, and it's not in that gully anymore.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's really interesting. Yeah. Holy man. So where were you staying? How did you live? There was nowhere to stay.
When I was working for the, when I first came, I stayed on the other side of the lake up in the loft area in an old house while they brought the accommodation in, which was like a man camp, basically.
I stayed there. We called it the ghetto.
Yeah, that's right. And it was, too.
And there was the executive ghetto where the management stayed. And then there was the doctor's ghetto where the doctors stayed.
Well, the doctors were up on the hill.
Oh.
They had a little A-frame.
Oh, they had an
A-frame there. Yeah, that became the
staff.
The volunteer first aid.
Oh.
Were up there because they were all volunteered.
Yeah.
And so that was an A-frame up on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctors and the patrol stayed up there.
No, I know it well because when I was living without electricity or running water, that's where I showered.
That's right. Yeah. It was a party place as well.
Oh yeah.
Couldn't have much of a party in the ghetto because it was just a bunch of rooms.
Just the rooms.
Ate with Leo the Greek.
Yeah, big Leo.
Yeah,
big Leo and little Leo.
Yeah,
and you were on the meal plan, I bet.
But Viv also ate there. I didn't know her at the time.
Really?
She was there at the first murder.
Viv, your wife, when the guy got shot in the cafeteria.
Yeah,
she was one of the witnesses.
Witnessed it? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't even know her then, but she was at the inquest.
Wow. Yeah,
she was there.
That's the one where the only guy there was Hugh that knew first aid, and he. He was trying to stop the bleeding, and the guy just bled out in the middle of the cafeteria.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All over a check or something?
Yeah, he wanted to cash a check, and they said, no, we don't cash checks and anything like that, because there's no bank.
No.
And so he went back and came back with a gun.
Yeah, wow.
Bang. It's just the cashier.
Yeah.
You know?
And what a drag.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy Whistler.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were you skiing a lot that winter, or you just worked?
Well, you had to ski to get to work.
I know, that's what I did too.
And I'd never skied powder before.
Yeah. A lot of it.
You learned how to ski powder.
Yeah, slowly.
Well, a lot of crashes.
Yeah, exactly. But it didn't hurt because there was so much snow.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. So you worked on the lifts, loading lifts or what?
That very first year, 67, I went over a jump and I had the old cable bindings. And they didn't release, and I broke my ankle. Oh. So my job for the next couple of months was at the mid station on the red chair, because they hadn't summer groomed; they just dropped the trees, the lower part, right?
Yeah.
And so if it was bad conditions, people would ski and they'd get on there. But most of my job was sitting there and telling people, "Lift your tips, lift your tips."
Yeah. So that was, but you, so then you could just ride down the gondola. You didn't have to ski at all, right?
No, in fact, that part had been cleared a bit better. There wasn't many trees on it, so you could ski down to the bottom.
Right.
Moguls.
Yeah.
And just,
big moguls.
Yeah, big moguls.
And it was tough getting down there because I don't think there was a bridge across the creek, or there was a very small bridge across Whistler Creek.
You went where that subdivision is now, where the condos are.
Yeah.
And there was a little bridge that you'd rocket across.
You had to go fast.
Back
on the road. It was only like a couple of logs wide or something.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And make it back down.
But you did get to ski in your first year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ski for work and ski after work.
Yeah.
And you've seen some of those videos, and that was 1967 on.
So you had it in your blood to go and climb mountains and, explore, and you were just the man that explored.
Yeah. Well, before I even came out, I had spent a summer at the Columbia Ice Fields driving the snowcats for the tourists. Mm-hmm. And so the second year that I went back there, that was with Bobby Calladine. Mm-hmm. He was there at the same time. And we went back that. So that was after the first year of operation. So climbed Assiniboine and Snow Dome and Andromeda. Just not the extreme routes, just got up there.
Yeah.
But you had to worry about crevasses.
Well,
massive ones.
You had to be in really good shape, and you had to be very careful.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what helped is when we were staying there, we were in a little camp at the bottom at 7,300 feet. Mm-hmm. So you're already partly acclimatized. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was my climbing experience.
So you must have been one of the few people in the valley that had any alpine skiing or hiking expertise, really. Who else would there be?
Well, Stefan Pless, of course, and Glenn Creelman. Glenn Creelman, you probably never met him. He was the early days. He worked for PGE, maintaining their microwave on Black Tusk on the shoulder.
Yeah, and Whistler, too, on the shoulder. Because when I lived up on the mountain there, they had the Tucker that went up there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he operated the Tucker.
Oh, okay.
But he also toured a lot. Uh-huh. And so there was him, there was Stefan Pless, and there was quite a few of the little cabin on Needle Lake.
Jordan's Lodge?
On Needle Lake. There was a lot of those guys there.
Yeah.
So, but they were weekenders.
Right. So it's like the Tyrol Club maybe would come up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They were all climbers. They skied by touring.
Right.
And then skiing down.
Right.
Yeah, so.
But you were, from what I understood, you as a local, I mean, Stefan Pless, I mean, he was kind of getting on at that point.
Yeah, he was
too.
Getting on a bit.
So you were the guy that was out there exploring. And then you had this incredible trip where you went across to Toba Inlet, of all places. Yeah. And that was like a massive expedition. How many days was that?
30 days.
30 days, yeah. From Meagher or from Pemberton or
what? But we were hired as mules. Mm-hmm. So from Meagher Creek, we were dropped off a helicopter there. It was for a gas pipeline that they wanted to put from Williams Lake out to the pulp mill, Powell River. Mm-hmm. And we were hired basically as human mules to support the surveyor.
Just carrying, wait.
Carrying food.
Food.
Carrying food, mm-hmm. Yeah. And support, and anything like that.
So how many of you were there?
Well, there was myself, Huey Smythe, and Gary, can't remember his last name. Anyways, mm-hmm. He since passed away. He had cancer and anything like mm-hmm. that. And then there was a crew from Edmonton that would arrange the supplies, to bring supplies.
What year would that have been?
That was 67. So it was in the summer, late summer, early fall of 67.
Sounds like a good job. How old were you in 67? You're 20-something?
67, 23.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Huey wasn't even legal yet.
How did he get that? Now there's an ambitious guy in the mountains.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He was with us the whole time.
That was an epic journey.
Yeah, it was. And we had to go where the pipeline was supposed to go, which means you're down in the bush. Uh-huh. And we got so much that Devil's Club was just another hand holder. You're into the river. So your hands are all toughened up and everything.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
And
wow, that must have been slow going.
It
30
was.
Days.
Yeah. Well, in some places, once we got close to the coast, when we went over Mount Casement, the edge there, and that was the first ascent we did, so we had a day off. We climbed a mountain, found out later, nobody had ever climbed it because of access.
Yeah.
And then when we dropped down the other side, so they had to do a lot of surveying there because the pipeline would have had to be tunneled in under the glacier. So we were camped next to the glacier. They said, okay, well, you guys can do what you want. So we climbed the mountain.
And you've got pictures, don't you? And it's online. You can see pictures of this expedition. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I bought that camera from a guy called Tim Rice. Mm-hmm. And it was a Pentax Swapmatic, and with a 35 millimeter lens, a 50 millimeter lens, and a 135. And I packed them with me, not the 35, just the 50 and the 135.
But it was all film. How many rolls of film?
It was all film. Yeah. I think it was about 4 or 5 rolls. You had to be careful what you're shooting.
Yeah, you couldn't just
click away. Mm-hmm. Like right now, my camera, I set it for 8-second intervals, and it'll take 300-400 shots.
There's got to be one good one in there.
Well, no. I make movies out of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, so you just kept doing that and climbing the local mountains. You climbed Wedge and a lot of the mountains around here.
Yeah, we'd done Black Tusk.
And not too many people had been, well, I guess Black Tusk in the park, I guess, has had quite a bit of activity over the years. But for us, just people that came here to ski, that was an incredible adventure.
We got to do something in the summertime.
Exactly. Wow. And, of course, there were real glaciers back then.
Yeah.
Real crevasses. You never fell or had an accident?
We were careful. Yeah. We basically, if you're on a glacier, there was two of us. Mm-hmm. And if you fell down, we were roped up. Yeah. But basically, we didn't have a harness. It was just a double bowline.
They hadn't invented harnesses. Well, really, you could use webbing. You know, you do webbing and use a carabiner and whatnot.
Yeah. No, we it was all old
school.
You had
wood, probably had wood ice axe, ice axe.
Yeah, still got one somewhere.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And crampons.
Yeah. Crampons were important. Yeah, for sure.
Because when I went with Ole, he didn't have crampons.
You went where?
We went up Wedge.
Oh, yeah.
So we went up, we did Weird and did the full traverse of Weird.
Yeah.
And then stayed overnight. And then we went up Wedge the next day and he didn't have crampons. So it wasn't the big problem because we weren't on steep ice. And the bare ice is actually easy to walk on as long as you're careful.
Yeah.
But when we came down, we got socked in with fog. And so Ole's from Sweden, Ole Larsson, you probably met him. He was a ski coach.
I don't remember, but yeah, I may have.
Yeah. He said, well, I haven't got crampons, so he was worried about where the end of the glacier was.
So he's smart. He didn't go sliding. Smart.
Well, no go also, stating. He had the training. In Sweden, you are in the army for 2 years, and he knew orienteering. So he went around the south side, all the way across the scree, and back
of the Wedge
to the cabin, and arrived there before I did.
Wow!
He went twice the distance, all with the compass.
Mm. Yeah. Wow!
And
good guy to have along. Although he should have had crampons.
I know. Yeah. Well, they're expensive.
Yeah. Well, now you went down on another trip. I heard down to the mountain north of Wirt, which is.
Mo's Peak. That was done in 67.
Now, why Mo? What's the deal with you? Because you didn't
name
that.
Surveyor's name.
That was the surveyor's name.
Yeah, so we named it after him.
Oh.
And nobody disputed it.
The surveyor of what?
Of the pipeline.
Oh.
Yeah, little Mo. He was 5'2".
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Really? Yeah.
And one of the pictures you'll see in there, he was very strict as far as diet was concerned. So you'll see quick Quaker Oats. He's holding up. And he says, you have that in the morning, you get your business done, then we're moving.
Mount Mo, that's a good story. I like that.
Yeah. It's actually Mo's Peak. They changed it. We said Mount Mo and they made Mo's Peak.
Oh, whatever. But it's a pretty sizable mount. It's got to be up to 8,000 or more feet.
Yeah, it's about 8,600. Wow. Yeah, and it's a separate peak. Glenn Creelman had tried, he's the one to let us know about it. He had tried it before on his own by going over Armchair Glacier. And then when he got into the saddle, he looked down and the moat was too big. There's no way he could get across it going down. Mm. And so he'd given it up. But he told us about it. And we, after that pipeline trip, it was the fall turned nice again. John Nairn and I went for it and we lucked out. We found one of the old horse logging sites. So we got up to 4,000 feet in just a bowl, just like that. There was no trees in it.
Oh, boy.
It just went straight up.
Lucky.
Yeah. And then and then we camped out overnight with a bunch of poles that we'd picked up and a poly tarp over the top of it on the edge of the mountain. And then the next day was around the glacier. And over
big distances. I mean, you know, were you hiking or skiing?
We're hiking.
Yeah.
Not skiing. But we did ski it. We skied it as part of the, in 1973, there was a local group wanted to have a good ski. So I'd suggested that because I knew the area. Mm-hmm. And we got flown up to the saddle between Weird and Moose Peak and then skied into the park. Down to Weird Glacier, which is a big valley glacier, and then got picked up and then dropped off at the top and then skied 7,000 vertical feet down the valley.
Wow. Thank you for listening today. Join us on my next episode and hear more Whistler stories that need to be told. Please share and let me know what you think of my podcast.
It's just mind-boggling.